The Business on RTÉ Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
Now, our next guest is someone who knows exactly all about spending wisely and making the best use out of the resources we have. From the age of seven, Eamon McKay of Frylight Solutions knew he wanted to be a businessman. Hailing from Sion Mills in County Tyrone, his company now has a 60 million euro turnover and employs about 300 people. Founder and managing director of Frylight Solutions, Eamon McKay, welcome to the studio. Eamon, maybe bring me back to your first job working after school in the local shirt factory, on the factory lines. You had the timer, you were in charge, it sounds like, very efficient processes. What impression did that leave on you? But kind of paint a picture of a young man on the floors of this factory.
Yeah, it was great to get my first job. First of all, good morning, Anya. It was very great to get my first job in the shirt factory. I was training to be time and study, so I was fascinated by the factory work, the busy machines going, and the ladies, mostly women, worked there, and all the work they'd done, the hard work they'd done, and we had to time the production side of things. So we had to make sure that the machines were efficient. So yes, it was very well organised. It was very hard working. We were using the latest technology at that particular time and for cutting and setting out the type of products that we were using. So yeah, I watched them hoovering up the needles and it was fantastic. I was so interested in business and putting this shirt into a box and it was going off, shipped out to be sold. It was fantastic and ended up in Marks and Spencer's and all the top brands. It was really, really good, really exciting for a young fella.
And did it leave you just with that real curiosity? Yeah, it was great getting the money in the pocket, but just how it all comes together. What is the process of putting a product together, running a business?
Yeah, it is. It is from the start to finish. It's really seeing where the end is. It's what you're giving to the customer. And quality was always a very big issue with myself. So I learned that at a very early stage. And you're looking for what the customer wanted. And putting that together was very important.
And you go out into the world and you spot then later on in life this opportunity around cooking oil. Tell me how that became the choice in life, this is the thing I'm going to pursue. I see that gap in the market. How did it come about?
It was needs must, Anya, because I went from the shirt factory who actually went on to a 2 or 3 day week. So we're talking in the 80s here, which recessions were kicking in as well. So people weren't buying the expensive shirts. But I went to a frozen chip factory, which was set up and was very busy because there were a lot of potatoes in Ireland at that particular time. So yeah, I went there and timed the machinery. So I went from hoovering up needles to absolute chaos trying to get frozen chips into a bag and producing it to supermarkets. So yes, in that we always needed the potatoes and the oil and how the oil was brought in and how the chips were made and blanched, from peeling them to blanching them to finish the finished product. That again appealed to me, and the waste that actually came off that. So yeah, that was always very interested in that. And again, recessionary times as well. So it was going to close. It wasn't efficient enough. There was a lot of bigger companies throughout Europe that were producing chips out a lot faster, and the potatoes were all around them, and the potatoes in Ireland we had a poor year's harvest. So yeah, got into difficulties, and I decided to concentrate on the oil market. I seen the gap of the oil market.
And what you realise looking at hotels and restaurants was that there was a lot of inefficiencies. Really, they were using these tins rather than buckets, a lot of oil going to landfill or just being disposed of incorrectly. And you realised, actually, I can see multiple uses of this if we do it a different way.
Exactly. That's what I seen. When I went there to sell the oil, the hotels and the restaurants, they had the branded oil there. So they didn't know who I was. They didn't know me from anything. So I took the idea, took the chance. And my very first day, I explained what I wanted to do and take away that with waste oil, which is a solution. I loved the part of the solution to the customer. I learnt that from a very early age.
Save them money.
Yes, save them money. Exactly. So they know where to put their waste oil. It was going to different places. And one particular customer said that they were using it for the burn the top of the bog so they could cut turf. And I said, look, I'll take away the waste oil for you. In fact, when you're starting your business and your own and you have very little money, I would have cleaned windows, I'd have cut your grass, I'd have done anything you wanted, pushed your car, whatever you wanted to do, I would have done it for to get a sale. Yeah. But I knew that I had a solution for the customer and they loved that.
And in all of that time, to get started, that day one back in Donegal, you knocked on something like 22 doors.
In fact,
that's persistence.
Yes. I went to the first door. It was in Bombay. And the lady there was brushing mopping the floor. And I went in and I told her what I was doing. And she said, I didn't know, I asked for the owner. And she was mopping the floor. So anyway, when I explained what I was doing and taking away the old oil, she looked at me and she believed in me. And I knew she did. And she said she had two hotels and she had the takeaway that we're standing in and had three customers in the one go.
Yeah.
And as, after a cup of tea and what I was looking to do, she then recommended me. She went on the telephone. She recommended me to other people in the catering industry, all her hotels and all her restaurants. And along the way, I just called with them and said I was sent there. And then the one led to the other, and doors opened, built from there.
And you mightn't have called it sustainability as we do now, but you know, you were looking at ways to be efficient, to reuse. Bring me back to your childhood. Like, where did that come from? Did that come from your mum or dad in terms of just always looking at ways to kind of save money, be efficient with the resources you had?
Yeah, well, look, I was very unfortunate. I brought up in a family of six. I was number four in the family, and I was the guy that took all the waste that was left over, all the leftovers, to local small farm. A lady lived beside us. We were in the country, and she had hens and pigs, and I would have took the, all the food waste from neighbours as well in a little truck that my dad made for me. And it was like my industry, it was my business, and I was about 7 years of age, and I would go along and I would pass the brock, as we call it, the waste food, and the lady would give me eggs and take them back to your mum, she would say, and don't break any on the way back, and I would carefully take them back and brought them back to my mum, and that was the reward. And my mum was a great baker, and she made scones and stuff.
There wasn't many at the time, I'd say, wanted to be dealing with all of that smelly work. That was you probably had spotted a gap in the market back then as well.
Yeah, again, I go back to the word solutions. Solutions, it was a solution for everyone. One. It's a solution to take the waste away. And then this lady wanted to feed her hens, and it was one of those places where the hens were running over the tables and the chairs and running around the houses, and I thought this was fantastic.
And the quid pro quo, so you took the waste away, yeah. And she gave you eggs,
yes.
And you give the eggs to your mother,
yes.
And what happened next in this exchange?
What happened, that led on to then my mum was a fantastic woman. She had four jobs. She was a caretaker of the local school. She was the lollipop lady. She worked an evening shift as well in the local mill, Herdman's Mill. And my sisters then were great bakers. So they were using the eggs to bake. As I got older and went to secondary school, then I would take the caramel squares into school and I would sell them.
So you were taking all of the produce from your sisters,
yes.
And your mother into lunchboxes.
Yeah. Yes.
They weren't questioning the large volumes and quantities of caramel squares going off to you at school, were they?
Well, I was making 100% profit. And my mum did it weekend. She says, where did my flour go? Where did the sugar all go? Why were we using so much? But I was showing her my credit union book. I was saying, look, there's where it is there.
So you were going into school with your lunchboxes of caramel,
yeah.
squares that were coming from the eggs that you were doing as,
yeah.
part of this exchange on,
yeah.
on the wastage, and,
yeah.
selling all the caramel squares for 100% profitability.
That's exactly what I was doing, yes. Yes.
And whatever happened to the money in the credit union?
Well, the money was good. I saved it all up. But if we needed anything at home, I would have reduced the money, yes. If my family needed a loan, of course, I charged them interest. But sometimes I didn't get the interest or didn't get the money back. But that's another story. But yes, it was always there. I always was a saver. And yeah. That's what I enjoyed doing. Yeah, in school, when I was doing the caramel squares one particular time, the business was quite good in our school at lunchtime. And some of the bigger guys actually robbed me one day, and I was very upset about this. So I went to a local joke shop in Derry and bought some laxative chocolate. And I asked my sisters to make me some buns with the laxative chocolate, and that was the end of my bully taking the stuff products off me, you know.
So they came to fleece you another day, took the product, consumed it,
yeah.
but never came back.
Exactly.
And was anything ever said of it by them or teachers then or in later years?
In later years, I was fortunate to be asked by the same school to come back and do an awards night and talk at the awards in the school, which was great. And I confessed then and there among all the teachers and the priests that I actually run my own tuck shop while I was at that school. And I was doing it in a way that, because there are young people there, they're coming for their awards and they're high achievers and everybody's talking about A-stars and A's, but there's people in the room maybe didn't achieve as much as I achieve academically. So I'd like to point out to them that you can always make your way.
Yeah, you
can
find
always
your
make
pathway.
You find your pathway and you're spiking what you're good at. You
and
know,
have you ever eyed up the boys that fleeced you that day and you sold on, or they fleeced you again with this suspect product? Nothing ever said of it since? No,
nothing. They never knew. Maybe today they'll learn. They're into the ethics. Some of them are still around. Yeah, but I see that. And that's my opening line. They made me who I was.
Yeah.
Because they gave me a challenge and I got around that challenge.
That was your solution.
That was my solution.
In that way. In all of that, did your parents realise then, the seven-year-old, you know, from then on and the tuck shop and working after school, that you had this real entrepreneurial spirit? Did it come from them, that work ethic? Like you mentioned your mom with the four jobs.
Yeah, it definitely would have came from my dad. My dad was an only child, but he was a fantastic man. He would have repaired her shoes, you know, we got hand-me-down shoes, so we fixed them all up, and if his Christmas presents came, he would have made something for Christmas for us. When Santa Claus came, he made it and painted it and had it ready. So he was always using something old with bicycles. He had no car. We never drive. We hadn't got very much, but we had loads of happiness and love. But he would have made a lot of stuff out of nothing. And give it to us. Yeah. And we thought it was fantastic.
And so, there's your sustainability.
Absolutely. That's where it came from. And to this day, the same. I look at wastage and I see where we can make things better and different. You know, and that's installed in me from a very young age.
And the work ethic, like your mom with four jobs, six of you in the house. Like it must, your mom and dad must have coordinated so much to keep the house and home a happy place and all of you going to school and out at a very difficult time, the 70s and 80s, as you talked about, the economy was tough going. Yeah. She must have been a formidable lady to hold down four jobs and raise six of you.
Absolutely, but it was second nature to her. She just, look, we had to do this. And that's what she done. And she went out and provided for us all, went to work and taught us that. And we all had to be in bed when Big Ben, then 10 o'clock news come on, we heard Big Ben chime and we all had to be in her bed before she came back on the bus. So, yeah, she had loads of friends and a load of really good neighbours as well. So she was very good in the community.
It was real teamwork then as a family, that you didn't want to let her down, hence you were getting to bed. Our duty is to be up in the morning and out to school.
Yeah, that's the way it was. That's the way it was. And it was troubled times. Yeah, it was difficult times because there was a lot of things happening in the news. I was a young boy around that time of maybe 9, 10 years of age, and that's back to the early 70s. And there was a lot of difficult times in the news going off, and my dad was taking a listen to the news at night, and I just knew by his reaction that something bad had happened, and we heard bombs, we'd seen rioting going on, and it wasn't going to school was difficult. There were soldiers there. There was things happening. It wasn't. We had to live through it. We didn't know any better. But when we look back on it, it was a tough time for everyone.
Yeah, and all of that unrest, and you're so young, living through the troubles. Like when you think back, do you remember feeling ambitious for yourself? You know, I might go to college, or I might go to Belfast, or was it very much, we just kind of have to look after each other and earn what we can and stick together and ride it out?
That's very true, Anya. We were brought up, you get a job and you keep it. Yes, if we wanted to go to Belfast to get further educated, that was welcome too. We'd have been supported, no question. But it would have terrified me to go to Belfast. Some of my friends went to work in the civil service in Belfast, but it would have terrified me to go there with the bombings and shooting things that happened. And it's a lovely place now, but back in the day it was terrifying for a young fella from the West Tyrone to go up to work to Belfast. So I looked at local jobs and I kept myself busy.
And would the academic route have been ever for you, or did you always just know business, creativity, problem solving, building solutions, that's going to be my path in life?
Yeah, I did. I was sort of looking at, I loved maths at school, obviously. I didn't like the physics or chemistries. I didn't like Shakespeare or English literature. I loved maths, geography and history. So that's what I stuck at it. And that's what I tuned in on. So yes, I could buy for a pound and sell for two.
And in the backdrop, like as you say, there's the troubles, but there's also just like where you were living in Strabane at one point in life, like chronic unemployment rates.
Yeah, the highest unemployment rate in Europe. There were two major factories, Herdmans and Adria, and it employed a lot of people. A lot of small industries too depended on them as well. But yeah, there wasn't much coming in. There wasn't many people wanting to set up businesses there. They were there for a long time, and particularly Herdmans were there for hundreds of years. And you know, they were pioneers of industry. But there's not much more than that. And when your parents got a job there, you know, they kept it, and you were lucky to get in. And there was a waiting list always to try and get in there. But I always had the burning desire to do something myself, to be self-supporting. I was the guy that made the money at a young age and bought my own jeans and dressed myself. And I know my parents didn't have very much. You know.
And that mill that both your parents worked in, that was a staple of the community, while chronic unemployment rates, that was there and they held on to it. In later years, you tried to buy that mill. Is that true?
I did indeed. In 2012, it came on the market. It closed in 2004. In 2012, it came on the market, and I was the underbidder there. What fascinated me about it was that they were ahead of their time in sustainability. They had their own hydro plant, they ran their own machines, their own electricity there, and they provided that, and that's still there to this day. I actually live about 100 yards away from the gate of it, and now it's some of the new part of the mill has been used for warehousing. The old part is dilapidated. It's sad to see that, and it was great because of a great community. There's a lot of sports facilities around there, so you get all your sports and you get your fishing there along the River Mourne. But yeah, I tried to unsuccessfully buy it, but it would have been a really sustainable project.
And with the frying oil business that's become a massive success, back in those early days where you're starting out and the economy is tough, but like it helped you with the wedding fund as well, didn't it, at the very earliest days?
Well, this is a big secret here today. Yes, I actually paid for my wedding with oil. I give the hotel a year's supply of vegetable oil as payment for the wedding. My wife didn't know that. She probably finds this out today. But,
yeah. You didn't tell her since?
Didn't tell her, no. I didn't want to be divorced very quickly. I wanted the marriage to be sustainable.
So you paid for oil a year to the hotel to pay the wedding
year,
fund.
Yeah. I went and done the deal and the price of it, went to the owner of the hotel, and he was a very good man. And I said, look, you're not a customer of mine, but I'll supply the oil to you for a year free and offset that against the bill. And that's what happened.
Very innovative. Take me up to then just current day realities. So many businesses like yours, they've had to navigate recession. We've had to live through, 9/11 and what we saw there. We're living through another moment now of cost of living crisis. And I'm sure businesses like yours having to navigate that. Like, what have been your learnings as a businessman through all of those moments that test you and how you dig deep into the resilience?
Yes, you have to believe in what you're doing is right. Doing things right, I believe, and you have to navigate your way around all challenges. For example, when I opened our first depot in 2001 in Galway, I signed a lease that morning, and it was September the 11th. I went in for lunch, and the first thing the headlines I seen on the TV in the hotel room is USA under attack, and I knew straight away that Ireland welcomes a lot of US visitors every year, particularly to the west of Ireland, and I knew this could cause issues for my business, my plans here, and I'm after signing a 10-year lease. So straight away, I got into the zone of what else can I look at. So I was going into the local supermarkets, and I was looking at all the bakeries and the coleslaw manufacturers, and I was saying, look, I have to look at closer to home. What markets are closer to home that I could tap into, and look at the factories as well, which, yeah, that all worked out well for me, because I was really doing hotels and restaurants at the start and chip shops, all based around the tourism area, particularly in the west of Ireland. And that led me into coming to the Dublin market then.
So you'd ready-made plan B. This has become a family business as well. Your two daughters work with you in the business now. Yes. One in IT, one out on the floor. Like, have they really kind of captured your work ethic and passion for it?
Yes, of course they grew up with the business. They've been with me Saturdays and Sundays filling oil, washing buckets, and one would be on the forklifts and doing all the lifting, and the other one would be in with the computers and the IT. Two very different but very hardworking girls, and very proud of them.
Do you talk about nothing else but the business at the family table now?
Well, we don't actually. If I'm truthfully, when I'm in the business, I'm seen as a leader. And when I go home, I'm seen as a follower. So I have to be daddy when I go home. So I follow the rest at home, but I'm a leader in the business, yeah.
And you know when to be father and give them worldly advice.
Very important. Yeah. In their business of their own choice. They'll have their own careers. Are they entrepreneurial? Possibly not. But they're very hardworking. They've got the work ethic from their granny.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, continued good luck to you. Eamon McKay, Managing Director and Founder of Frylight Solutions.